Shalom Aleichem, Chaveret, Binyamin Hammer at the National Council of Young Israel. We're happy to present Rebbe's final Shilas before the summer, conference call number 78. Thank you, Rebbe.
You're very welcome. Question one, is it appropriate to go on a three-day vacation to a place without a minyan? Shachos on first day and Maariv on third day will be fine. More than the missing minyan, is it a concern that it will weaken the concept of minyan for the rabbi's children, low teenage? Will also be missing minyan. What about the congregation asking just in conversation where the rabbi went and knowing there wasn't a minyan there? Minyan is very, very important. No question about it. However, there can be a situation where a vacation where there's no minyan is necessary. For example, for health reasons. Then a person who's going for health reasons is exempt from tefillah b'tzibur. One could even argue that a vacation to refresh oneself, to somehow get more energy for the future, might arguably be in that category as well and being very, very important. However, in most cases, it's not so important. And therefore, a person should find a different vacation. Nowadays, there are many, many vacation sites where there are minyanim. They're advertised all over the place. I think it's better for the rabbi, better for his sons, and better for the congregation that he choose a different option where he can go on a vacation and still find a minyan. Question two. Is there a problem for a woman who will be fully covered up to take young children age 9 and below to a public pool that will have mixed swimming? The children will also be in a cover-up. If it is permitted, until what age would it be permitted? Number one, I do not believe it's appropriate to go to such a place, even if there's no formal violation, because the place itself is, we'll call a place of a pretense of immodesty. In today's world, we have to be especially careful to protect ourselves from these influences. Children are our responsibility for the mitzvah of chinuch, and the mitzvah of chinuch includes these issues as well. As a famous shuvah of Moshe about co-ed education, which he discusses chinuch from different perspectives, perhaps the young children don't yet have the, we'll call it the yetzer hara, that leads others to want to go to mixed swimming pools, but nonetheless they can become used to such a practice and want to continue it later on when it would be a problem. So therefore, it's certainly not advisable at all to go to such a place, even if there's no technical violation. Now, a boy age 9 could have technical violations as well. And I would say there's only, what you said in the previous question, there's a health consideration, no alternative, it's very hot. Then one can argue this, if you avoid technical violations, perhaps there could be, make a case for it, especially for little children. But even in that case, it's not appropriate. People should find different opportunities to either go swimming or find a little pool in the backyard to avoid these places. Question three. Can children under bar mitzvah read the Megillas, Koheles, Shir HaShirim, and Rus? If they can, is it something that the Rav would recommend? Well, in part it depends on the custom in Yeshua. Our custom in most shuls in America, we do not make a bracha on these Megillas. We view it only as a minig, as opposed to the opinion of the Vilna Gaon, who makes bracha, two brachas on it. So for us, it's only a minig. If it's only a minig, by definition, someone under my mitzvah is, technically speaking, kosher, because there's no obligation in the first place. Nonetheless, here too, it's not appropriate. There is a custom to have the Megillahs read in shuls on these days, days of Yom Tov, read by a gadol, so over bar mitzvah, and it's not appropriate to engage in this practice, even though it'd be good for chinuch. So you can find a different way how to do chinuch for children. Let them prepare it now, and they'll read it when they turn 13. I would not recommend it. Question four. Can I give a baby rattle to a baby on Shabbos? Is there a difference if it makes noise when I move it or not? Is there a difference if the baby is crying and this would calm the baby down? What if the baby is not crying, but the baby needs to be stimulated / entertained, and all the baby toys you have, or at least the ones that the baby likes, make noise? This is a very important question. If you look in the Bir Halacha, it's in Shin Mem Gimel Sif Aleph, Midivrei Sofrim, he writes that when it comes to the Rabbonans, if it's for the Tzorach of the Tinok, which is the purpose of the child himself as opposed to the parents, there is no violation, what we call Lispos Biodayim. And therefore, it should be okay, especially since presumably the child has no kavana to make music or anything of the like. And there were those who say that if there's no musical intention, even for a grown person, there's no violation. Take a look at Simon Shin Lamed Ches Sif Aleph. Nonetheless, that's only one opinion. We pass on the halacha that a person should not make noise, and therefore the person himself should not use the rattle to make noise, but may give it to the baby, even if the baby is making noise. This is found in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, Perek Tezayin Sif Gimel. That's a chapter about games and toys. To move it, presumably, if the parent is not intending to make noise with the rattle, but simply moving it, so it's Dava Sheinu Miskaven to make noise, there may be a case in which it's what we call a psikresha. It will inevitably make noise. Even in such a case, it's rumored to be lenient on the grounds that the parent is not intending to make noise, doesn't really want to make noise, the noise is not pleasant for him. We call it a psikresha, the lo nichalei, and the prohibition is purely by the rabbonon, and a psikresha lo nichalei by ikur the rabbonon, according to the psak of Gedolei Olam from the previous generation, Rav Moshe, Rav Avadi Yosef, and others, is permissible. Question 5. What level of scholarship must the Talmud achieve to gain the right to paskin differently than his Rebbe? This is a very complex question. The Gemara is very, very harsh on somebody who is more halacha b'fnei rabo, even if he's agreeing, certainly if he's disagreeing. However, this prohibition is limited to rabo muvhok. Rabo muvhok is someone who is rove, chachmaso, mimenu. The majority of your knowledge comes from this Rebbe. Now, in the days when Torah Shebaal Peh was Baal Peh, this meant that literally a person's primary source of knowledge was his Rebbe. It would be a tremendous chutzpah to argue with such a Rebbe under normal circumstances, and that's what the Gemara is talking about. If you look in the other day, you'll see that the Poskim say that nowadays our Rebbe's are really the Sforim, not that the Torah Shebaal Peh is committed to writing both in the Talmud and subsequent authorities, Rishonim, Achronim, even modern-day Poskim. So they are, in effect, our Rebbe's. And therefore, the concept of a Rebbe Muvuk, of a human being, is drastically limited in our times, as the Poskim say. But this means, perhaps, that a person shouldn't argue on his newfound Rebbe's, namely the Svarim. Person decides he's going to paskin against all the Sforim in the world. Paskin himself. Now, obviously, they're great men who are able to do that, but most individuals do not rise to that level. And therefore, since most people do not have the right to paskin independently of all Sforim, they should not do so. If he's already reached that level of independence, which requires a significant measure of knowledge, requires tremendous Yirat Shamayim, requires experience, then, in fact, he may issue independent rulings, as has been done from time immemorial, or in the event that there's a dispute within the Svarim, who are now his Rebbeim. So one Rebbe says A, one Rebbe says B, and he's called upon to decide between the two of them, then presumably you'd have the right to do so, again, cautiously, only with some deeper understanding of the issues at hand. But other than that, a person should not paskin, if you will, against his newfound rebbeim that are the svarim. And even if he has a private rebbe, he would do well to stay away from arguing frontally on what a rebbe says, unless he's absolutely convinced that the rebbe is incorrect, either based on his knowledge of what's written in the svarim. It would be preferred, if he has to argue with his rebbe's psak, to speak to the rebbe and find out what the rebbe says. Maybe the rebbe's right and he's wrong. So this is a very complex question, and what I said until now is just an overview. Question 6. Can a chazan about kriya drink or have a throat lozenge / mint during tefillah / laning to help with a dry mouth? What if it's on a day where that requires kiddush? Does it make a difference what part of tefillah it is? What about a rub during a drusha before kiddush? Now, the first question has to be reinterpreted. Can you drink during tefillah, laning? You can't drink and talk at the same time. So clearly what the question means is you're taking sips between speaking, between different parts of davening or laning. So if you are drinking water, technically speaking, water is permissible before davening, and therefore, even if he's in the middle of davening, if it's necessary to take a sip of water, it's technically permissible. It's frankly unsettling. People walk in with their water bottles everywhere, like they're drinking everywhere. I don't know, people have suddenly have dry mouths. It seems it's part of the culture. You should try to avoid drinking anything in davening because drinking takes away from focus, concentration, from sanctity. But technically speaking, there's no prohibition of drinking water before davening, and if necessary, again, only if necessary, during davening, take a sip between various psukim, if necessary. Before kiddush is a different story. One may not drink water, even water before kiddush, and therefore one should stay away from this. As far as throat lozenges or mints, well, there's another problem here. This can be done even while the person is speaking, but you run afoul of the Mishnah Brura in Siman Kuf Ayin Beis in Siv Zayin, based on the Gemara, Brachos Afnan Aleph Amad Aleph, Yimole Pi Tehila Secha. The person's mouth should be full only with brachos, with nothing else in your mouth when you are davening or saying a bracha, and therefore we should avoid these throat lozenges or mints as well. Now, same thing with the Rav before Kiddush. He should not be eating or drinking anything. One can argue it was absolutely impossible to get the words out. I'm not sure what a dry mouth really means. It's just can't speak at all. So then, you know, even though it shouldn't be done, maybe better than nothing, but a person should try to avoid it by getting someone else to lay in or the davener to speak to avoid this problem. Question number 7. Where do we draw the line between games that we play on Shabbos, Yom Tov, and sports that we generally do not? Where does ping pong fall? What about playing catch outside, assuming all social, shooting around the basketball? Is there room for kula to play sports on Shabbos if it will bring the kula together on Shabbos? And maybe even encourage many to stay for learning / davening as well? What about the youth and team programming on Shabbos afternoon? Well, in that same Perek and Shmir Shabbos Kilchosa, Perek Tazayin Sif Aleph, he says in a preliminary comment that once somebody turns bar mitzvah, they should try to avoid all of these activities. Shabbos is meant for more spiritual activities, such as learning Torah and davening, and if necessary, if he runs out of patience for those, reading quietly or other quiet activities, going out to play sports is not ideal. However, in that same chapter in Sivav, he says that ping pong is not a technical violation, nor is playing ball, if it's not going to be done along the ground, but it's afraid Shema to make gumos, to make ditches in the ground. So therefore, technically speaking, ping pong and throwing around a ball or shooting around a basketball would not be technical violations. Nonetheless, I'm strongly opposed to organized sports. Organized sports takes on an entirely different coloration. Not just a couple of little boys decide to pass the time by shooting around, catching, and playing ping pong. Once it's an organized league or something similar, it's, I believe, a strong violation of spirit of Shabbos. You're probably familiar with the Yerushalmi that tells us that Tur Shimon was destroyed because they played ball on Shabbos. It's not a good idea in an organized fashion, even though as a result of this organized ball, the Kila comes together on Shabbos, the same for learning davening as well, youth and team programming, Shabbos afternoon. I believe it's all inappropriate. We should stay away from organized sports on Shabbos. Question 8. A shul in an older part of the community is now shutting its doors. What is the responsibility of the remaining balabatim in regards to the proceeds of the sale? Must the money remain in the greater community or wherever they decide to give it? Is there a hierarchy of disbursement? Who the halacha should receive monies first? The closest next shul, yeshiva, kollel, Torah institution in Eretz Yisrael? Regarding the sale of the building, if all the clay kodesh and signage is removed, they are limited to who you can sell the building to, church, mosque, ashram, reform, temple. Okay. Question number one, the first part, is addressed in Siman Kuf Nun Gimel Sevav, where shul is being sold. And there we are taught that the ideal place for the money to go is for Haspokas Tavide Chachamim. As the Mishnah Brewer writes there in Sivkot and Chav Gimel, based on Megillah Daf Chav Zayin, can even sell a Sefer Torah for learning Torah. Certainly can sell a shul for learning Torah. So therefore, the hierarchy is yeshiva, kolel, perhaps even higher, Torah institution in Eretz Yisrael, because Eretz Yisrael has priority in general. And obviously, the idea of Aniya Yircha does not apply because the community is shutting its doors. The Yircha is closing down. One could argue that the greater community, closest next shul, which could be who knows how many miles away, has the status of Yircha, perhaps. But it seems to me, unless it's the yeshiva nearby, that the greater priority, as the Shulchan Aruch has it, is Haspokas Tamidei Chachamim, the encouragement of learning Torah, either with a yeshiva or a kollel or a Torah institution, or supporting people individually who are studying Torah. This is the highest level. Now, this doesn't mean that we're restricted to that. There could be a partial disbursement to other fine stuckers as well. What's most important is that the remaining balabatim conduct their affairs transparently and scrupulously without any conflict of interest or certainly not any embezzlement. This is very important when shuls close. Be very careful how the money for the shul, sale of the shul, is appropriated. As far as to whom you can sell it to a church is a disaster. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this in Chelek Beis, Simon Mem Dalet and Mem Hei. Two tshuvas about how terrible it is. A church is worse than anything else we find in the Gemara, and it should absolutely not be done. Presumably the same would be applied to the other religions or denominations found here as well. It is true that Rav Moshe writes in the Shas Atchad Godel, where the only way it can be sold is if some other religion or is going to purchase it at the end of the day because the population in that community that used to be fully Jewish is now fully belong to another religion. Rav Moshe still says you may not sell it to a church, but it's absolutely impossible otherwise. So, you know, sell it to a broker, and the broker will do what the broker has to do. And, again, only begrudgingly if it's absolutely impossible to sell the shul otherwise. We should try to find opportunities to sell it to a different public institution, be it a hospital, be it a public school. There are ways, and the Balabata will be well advised to think about now, before the actual sale, opportunities to sell it to a neutral organization. Question 9. May an onen count for a minion if he is in shul at that time. Does it matter if the mason is in another city? If you look in the Mishnah Brura, Siman Nun Hei Sivkot Nechav Dalet, he says an onen does not count for a minyan because he's absolutely prohibited from performing mitzvahs. However, if the mason is in another city, according to some authorities, if you decide to read the Shema, for example, Ein Mochen Biyodo, we do not protest against him. It's the Sfut among the Rishonim. And therefore, since we would not protest against someone who would read Shema at a time that he's a quote only, but the Mesa is in another city, so therefore, by the same token, he could count to a minion as well. Question number 10. Is it important for the Aron to be open from Yahalalu on Shabbat when taking back the Sefer Torah? Or is it okay if the Aron is only open when the Sefer Torah is already being carried around the shul? Now, it seems to me that it's okay to open the Aron Kodesh when the Sefer Torah arrives right in front of the Aron Kodesh. Not necessary to open it from the Sefer Yahalalu. I'm not clear what it means is already being carried around the shul. What does it mean to carry the Sefer Torah around the shul? We do find that there is a concept of being melave a Sefer Torah, to accompany the Sefer Torah behind the Sefer Torah, that is found in the Mishnah Berurah and others for him. But around the shul, that's a custom which it does exist in certain places, but I do not encourage that. I don't think it's proper to carry Sefer Torah around the shul. If someone wants to escort the Sefer Torah, they should walk respectfully behind the Sefer Torah. They want to kiss the Sefer Torah. That's not an absolute requirement. And as long as there's no crush of humanity, those individuals who want to do so should find a way to do so without taking the Sefer Torah, quote, out of its way. In other words, I think the preferred way is to take the Sefer Torah from the Aron Kodesh directly to the Bima, and on the way back from the Bima, directly back to the Aron Kodesh. I'll tell you a humorous story. I usually don't tell stories in this forum, but I'll tell this story. When I was elected Rav in my position, Young Israel of Riverdale, way back in 1973, it was a unanimous vote, except there was one individual who abstained because he felt that we don't need any rabbi. We know that kind of alabas. My first Shabbos in the shul, had previously been a practice at the Young Israel Synagogue to take the Aron Kodesh all the way around to the back of the shul, and then back around, and I said, no more. We stopped it right away. Because I felt that's not right. When I grew up in the yeshiva, they didn't do it that way. Even the shtibla, they didn't do it that way. In Eretz Yisrael, I never saw it done that way. So this is not proper. So this Yiddish-speaking European balabos came over to me and said, Shkoyach Ruv. He's congratulating me that I stopped, in his words, Nemin de Sefer Torah, Arum de Ganza Azora, the Asoita. It's referring to the Gemara that the Sota was too tellus b'chol Azora, so she should confess her sin. An interesting anecdote from many years ago. At the same time, I'm aware of the fact that in some communities this is considered a very integral part of the service, maybe the highlight of the service, and we don't want to make a fight over it. But if I'm really being asked what's okay, in my opinion, it's not an ideal to carry the Sefer Torah around the shul. The Sefer Torah should be taken from the Bima to the Aron Kodesh. Those who want to mimolav it or kiss it should find a way how to do it. And the Aron need not be open until the Sefer Torah gets close to the Aron. Question 11. How long after Shkia is Tetzel Gochavim for the end of Shabbos? It's Minig America to follow Rav Moshe's 8.5 degrees, or can one be more lenient and fall close to 7 or 7.5 degrees, as Rav Soloveitchik was reported to allow his shul to in Boston? the Pnini Harav, page 73. In the Shas Atchak, like a caterer in a hotel on Yom Tov, can one be somech on the even earliest man of the Siddur of Shnei Zalman? And if so, what is that man? Well, not everyone is familiar with degrees. I believe that degrees is the correct way to figure out what Tzitzit Kochavim is, but these numbers are not so familiar to people. So let's just talk about minutes, and then we'll associate the minutes with the numbers. Minutes everyone understands. For Moshe the Tshuva, he looked out of his balcony in the Lower East Side, and he saw three stars 45 to 50 minutes after the sun sets. Now, he doesn't distinguish in that Tshuva between the different seasons. We all know that the Tzitzit Kochavim is affected by two considerations. One is latitude, how high we are in the world compared to Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, where the original formulations were made, Shloshes Rivei Mil or the like. And two, the season. Presumably the number of minutes that was given, 3/4 mil, which is either 13 and a half minutes or maybe a bit more, 17 minutes. These are for Eretz Yisrael or Bavel in the spring equinox. And the amount of time is increased when you go further north and is increased in the summer as well. If you look up the charts, 8.5 degrees in the summer is approximately 50 minutes here in the New York area. So 50 minutes is Rav Moshe's man, that's the 8.5. Again, it would be a little bit shorter in the springtime. Now, the idea of my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, being quoted in the Pnini Harav, there it is found that Rav Soloveitchik agreed to this man of 42 minutes. Now, 42 minutes is not a Kabbalistic sum of minutes. As we know, the Mem Beis has a Kabbalistic overtones. Rather, I believe, it's simply what we call in America an hour after Lichtbenchen. And when this number came about, the most popular time of the week was candlelighting. People weren't so sophisticated, they didn't know that much about Shkia. Witness the famous Tshuva of Moshe, he was accused of being Mechal Shabbos. He was found in a car after Lichtbenchen, and he promised not to do it again. So Lichtbenchen is printed in every calendar. Lichtbenchen is 18 minutes before sunset. That's what was printed in all the calendars of the time, which means an hour after that, obviously we're off by a minute or two, is 42 minutes after the sunset. And that's where my Rebbe was quoted. Now, where the number that came from, I'm told it came from the Agudas HaRabbonim, which my Rebbe was a member, after World War II. And it was, I'm told, there was pressure on the other side from the influx of Eastern European Rabbonim, headed by the Satmar Rebbe, who wanted to introduce the Rabbi Natam to be universally accepted in America, 72 minutes or longer. He failed in having it universally accepted in America, although there's a growing, ever-growing population of Hasidim who do keep the 72-minute shiur, some keep even longer. But he did succeed in convincing the Gudas Rabbanim that they should make it a little bit longer than it was before. What was it before? My best guess, it was the earliest man of the Siddur of Shnei Zalman. What is that? That is 6 degrees beneath the horizon. And in Chabad calendar to this day, you will see 6 degrees beneath the horizon. Now, 7 degrees is approximately 40 minutes, hence 7 or 7.5, as Rav Soloveitchik was quoted. And 6 degrees is between 30 and 35 minutes in New York. And this is something which was done. And then they added approximately 10 minutes to the Zman after World War II. That became sort of de rigueur in most circles. Chabad may have their own practices, but in most circles. It seems to me, halacha lemaisa, although it can be much more makel when it comes to other areas of halacha, such as after a fast day, things of this nature, where one can rely in a pinch even on the shortest shear, the 6 degrees. When it comes to Shabbos, which is much more serious, we should be more strict. We should follow Rav Moshe's shear of 50 minutes, even if it's a little bit longer than we really need. And Rav Moshe was testifying what he saw outside his window in the Lower East Side, where there were two obstacles to seeing clearly. One, the lighting, artificial light, and two, the smog, the fog of the New York skylight. As a matter of fact, when we went to Camp Morashah for the summers, we found 3 stars much closer to the time of the 6 degrees. There was no artificial light and no fog or smog. So that's probably accurate for other areas such as Kriyat Shema and fast days. When it comes to Shabbos, we have to be machmer for a number of reasons. One, it's a much more serious matter. Two, it's a chiv of Tosefet Shabbos. And therefore, I believe that the proper shear is a Moshe shear of 50 minutes, and that should be kept everywhere. Now, caterers want to start earlier than that. It seems to me that they should not be allowed to do so. They should wait 50 minutes. And the Shas HaTchah Godol, which Rav Moshe wrote 45 or 50, and usually caterers are not operating in the middle of the summer. I think we can rely on the 45-minute shiur, which Rav Moshe has written as well, only in the Shas HaTchah, but even that should be discouraged. I think the 50-minute as a firm cutoff is the best policy. Question number 12. A non-levushal bottle of wine was opened by a Shomer Shabbos, and the cork was stuffed half back in. A waiter non-Shomer Shabbos or not Jewish moved the bottle to another table. Still not poured from. Can I still drink the wine? If you look in Yeridea, Simen Kuf Chavdalad, Sif Yudzayin, and later on in the Simen as well, you will find that there was a prohibition, according to some, if a non-Jew moved a Kli Pasuach, an open bottle of wine, even though he did not pour from it and did not touch it. That itself is a matter of dispute. It seems that in our case, it's not an open bottle. The cork was stuffed half back in. I don't know exactly what that means, but it seems not to be an open bottle. Even an open bottle is a matter of dispute. So I think there's no problem drinking this wine. Question 13. Until what age may a half-sister, the same mother, sing mirrors with her half-brothers? It seems to me she can sing at any age. It seems to me that there's no problem of a sister singing in the presence of her brother. If there would be a problem like that, all Jewish homes would be in deep trouble. We assume that there's no such problem, and it seems to me that a half-sister is the same as a full-sister in this regard. 14. We discussed the issue of Chodesh Hashanah in regards to rabbinic employment. If a Rav's contract is not renewed, does the shul have an obligation to pay him severance? Does it make a difference if this was a full-time position or part-time? If the shul put into the contract, we do not give Chodesh Hashanah, but they still have an obligation, la halacha. Chodesh Hashanah is not enshrined in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Gemara. It became a custom in certain places. I believe that the original source of Chodesh Hashanah in contemporary times comes from the State of Israel. The State of Israel, as you are probably aware, was a socialist country, certainly in its infancy, and the Histadrut, the labor organization, was very, very powerful. And they had this idea of Chodesh Hashanah, part of protecting the rights of laborers. And it became a quote-unquote Minhag HaMedina. And if there were Batei Din who imposed it, not because of the law itself, because we follow the halacha, we don't follow secular law, even if it's from the State of Israel, but as the Minhag HaMedina. As the Minhag HaMedina in the Holy Land, it's applied by many Batei Din in many cases. In America, to the best of my knowledge, in secular law, there's no such concept. And even with respect to Minhag HaMedina, I'm not aware that it applies to the world at large. It is true that in certain parts of the Jewish world, this has become customary. And in those parts, it becomes the halacha, because minig is koveya halacha. Hakol kivim minig ha-medina. And this is open and shut. However, this question, rabbinic employment, can't say for sure where the rabbi is employed. It seems to me that there are many congregations where the Chodesh Hashanah is not something which is accepted, not in the shul, not in the schools, not anywhere. And therefore, Hamotze Mechaveh Olav Arai, it's up to the rabbi to prove to a bezin that in fact this is the Minhag HaMedina, and if it's so, he's entitled to Chodesh Hashanah. If not, he's not. The shul puts it into the contract, it's clear there's no obligation. That's why it's put into the contract. And as the Chofetz Chaim said many years ago, many disputes exist because nothing was put into the contract, left a lacuna, left it blank. It's always good to put things into contracts. We do give Chodesh Hashanah, we don't give Chodesh Hashanah. People don't want to do it because it's unpleasant to contemplate that we do or don't give Chodesh Hashanah. There are Torah and Masorah guidelines which indicate that Chodesh Hashanah is applicable in some cases. If there's a pension plan, it may not be applicable. But those are guidelines for schools, not for shuls. And there are many schools in which it is clearly not the Minhag HaMedina, where many teachers have left without Chodesh Hashanah. This case is referring to a contract which is not renewed. There were those who claimed Chodesh Hashanah even when they stepped down from their positions, which is a further stretch. In short, it depends upon the Minhag HaMedina. It's always appropriate to put things into the contract. Having said all this, if a rabbi's contract is not renewed, even if the shul has no obligation to pay him severance, even if it's certainly appropriate to give something to the rabbi, kind of a hanukkah, a tip, based on the psukim we have in Chumash. How much obviously depends on each and every case, on the individual, on the status of the shul, on the reason that the rabbi's contract was not renewed. I want to wish everyone a good summer and hope all the rabbanim here will have their contracts renewed.
Thank you, Rebbe. Thank you for your bracha. And I want to wish everyone a wonderful summer. We hope we can call upon Rebbe after the summer vacation. Thank you very, very much.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.